Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I got to tell you something very geeky, but I think it's very interesting. And before I tell you the piece of information, just remember, we report, you decide. So don't get angry with me if I'm giving you information that I dived into. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, there are good things about Ryan McMahon. There are bad things about Ryan McMahon. I laid it out. He's a clear upgrade over Oswald Peraza. He's a good defender. I think one stat you can't calculate is what it's going to be like just to get away from a bad environment.
Right.
But I don't like his contract. He strikes out a lot. There's things I don't like about him. There's something I dove into during this break I'm very surprised about. When you go to Baseball Savant, they'll tell you, like, all right, if this guy played his home games in this ballpark, how would it affect his power? Like, would he get home runs added to him?
Oh, interesting.
Or would he lose home runs?
So did you do this?
I did this with Ryan McMahon in Yankee Stadium because I think there's this natural belief as a left-hand hitter that, oh, my God, he's going to benefit from Yankee Stadium.
He goes the opposite way, doesn't he?
He not only goes the opposite way.
Of course.
Yankee Stadium projected would produce the fewest home runs of any stadium for Ryan McMahon in baseball.
Of course.
Which I am surprised about. And so when I saw that, I was like, that doesn't make sense. Let me go deeper.
Does he just not pull the ball?
Yeah, there's your answer. A lot of his home runs are to left center field. And I remember bringing that up to you about Juan Soto. Remember mm-hmm. how I said, Soto actually benefits from City more than Yankee because of his power to left center?
But he hits the ball so far opposite way, it doesn't matter.
Right. Look, Soto had a great year in both ballparks. Right. It doesn't matter. But yeah, Ryan McMahon's projected home run total in every other ballpark is higher than it would be at Yankee Stadium.
Welcome to hell!
Well, maybe he changes his swing. Maybe he starts trying to get ahead of fastballs and everything else.
I don't think you want that either.
I don't either, because that's what Gleyber Torres started to do and obviously destroyed his swing and our trust in him. But maybe, I don't know.
I'm not telling you.
That's discouraging.
It's discouraging.
It's very discouraging.
Look, it doesn't mean they didn't get better. They clearly got better. The bar on a trade like this is so easy because you're talking about Oswald Peraza.
Right.
We're talking about Yorbit Vivas.
Who also wasn't hitting home runs.
Right. So even the fewer home runs he's projected to hit at Yankee Stadium versus literally every other stadium in baseball is still better than what Peraza gave you. But I admit I was surprised. Like, I was expecting, you know, because the common belief is, oh, this is Yankee Stadium. He's a left-hand hitter. This is perfect. Short porch. This is awesome. But then you dive deeper, and it's like, yeah, that's not really the case, actually. So my apologies. I don't say that with a smile. I just say that to give you the information.
Although you're laughing.
I'm laughing because I'm surprised. Okay. I'm not enjoying it. I think the move is a decent move. Like, I can't be any more clear. Would have I preferred Eugenio Suarez? Yes. I had that argument with Tommy the other day. Mm-hmm. Despite his shortcomings, I think he impacts winning more just because he's a much better hitter. So I've been honest about it, but the bar that Cashman was looking to clear was such a low bar that any addition was going to be an upgrade.
It's true.
And so they're a better team today than they were 2 hours ago. Matt's calling from Long Beach. What's up, Matt?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
All's good, man.
Love the show. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, man. What's up?
Yeah, absolutely. So real quick, I mean, the McMahon trade is one thing. You know, I'm not exactly ecstatic about it. You know, I think it is definitely an upgrade on defense, as you guys said. You know, he's obviously a big strikeout hitter, not a big contact hitter, which I think we need. But I really wanted to talk more about, like, the Volpe situation.
Yeah.
Because, listen, I understand, you know, he's been extremely lackluster, but this kid's getting a lot of hate right now. You know, he's been pretty horrific on defense. He does have a gold glove, so I think it's solvable. I think it's obviously a confidence issue. And also horrible with runners in scoring position as well. But if you look just at the numbers, you know, he's the kid's on pace for, I think, 25, 26 home runs, over 100 RBIs this season, and then 20 stolen bases. You know, he's batting 215, 220 with a pretty bad, you know, first half of the year. So I just wanted to get you guys' opinion and see, like, you know, do you think this is solvable? I heard Sal say the other day that, you know, he should be sent down to AAA immediately, and that's just, like, kind of not how I see it.
Too late. It's too late for that. I think that was an option a month ago. I think that was an option 2 months ago. But I think now on July 25th, you know, your alternative is Oswald Peraza, who has actually struggled even more offensively than Volpe has.
Right.
So I don't think it's a great option. I think what they have to do is that next year, Anthony Volpe shouldn't be DFA'd. He shouldn't even be traded because his value is probably low. I think he should be viewed more as a super utility player who can play a little second base, can play a little shortstop, even play a little third base. And if he can prove he can hit on a consistent level, then he could win a starting job again. But I'd be more open-minded to improving myself at shortstop.
But now you have to go get a shortstop to do that.
Yeah.
And so that's the biggest challenge. The reality is that Anthony Volpe is just, he's just not as advertised, and that's what's frustrating, because in our minds we had him we already had his hero story written, right? We already knew how we were going to remember him 15, 20 years from now, and the problem is he's just not that type of player. Now, the other issue is that there is no other option right now, as you just mentioned, Evan, but there is something you can do.
What's that?
As a manager.
What's that?
Sit him down for a couple days.
You can do that. I mentioned that earlier. You can do that
and
with Peraza.
And he should. I'm not talking about,
and play Peraza for a few days.
100%. Yeah. Maybe you should do that.
Yeah.
Even if just to help the kid appreciate what he has. You know, have him not think about the struggles that he's going through right now. Reflect, take a deep breath, and come back and see if it's better. Because there's really nothing else to do.
Well,
unless you're going to fully move on from him and do what you're espousing, which is go get somebody to play shortstop. He's a super utility player.
Yeah. And that's something for next year. Like, I think, right, unfortunately, for the moment, for today, there's really not much you can do. Like, do I agree with sending him down today on July 25th? I just don't think.
Because who's playing shortstop?
Probably Oswald Peraza.
But that's worse.
Or Andrew Velasquez, who right, they could call up. Like, they're not great options.
Mm-mm.
So I think it would have been something to consider last year. I think it would have been even something to consider earlier this season. I don't love it right now. So there are two parts to this. What do you do now? What do you do next year? Right now, I think he plays. I don't think there's anything wrong with sitting him every once in a while for Peraza. See what happens. See if it sparks Volpe. See if maybe Peraza gets right, a new life. I think next year, the way Volpe needs to be viewed. I remember saying this about Stanton a couple of years ago, because Yankee fans were in a rush to say, get rid of him. Just pay him to go away. And I'm like, well, hold on. That doesn't make any sense. Just lean into what he's becoming. Forget how much money he's making. Forget what he used to do. Make him a right-handed bat who's a part-time player. Now, luckily, Stanton has proven he can hit righties and lefties even at this age.
Right.
So I don't think he needs to be that kind of part-time player I described. But instead of just getting rid of somebody, you lean into what they are becoming. Anthony Volpe right now, because of his just sheer inconsistency offensively, and the fact his defense is no longer good enough to say, hey, he's just a glove-first shortstop, I view as a super utility player, an IKF, right?
Yeah.
And that can change. Volpe's still young enough. He's got a chance. I'll give you another guy. Ahmed Rosario. I brought that up the other day. Ahmed Rosario was a prized prospect by the New York Mets, even Cleveland after they made the Lindor trade. Eventually, Rosario just leaned into becoming a super utility player. And he's actually a good little ball player.
Yeah, and you can have a long career doing that.
Yes.
He's valuable to whatever organization, even if it is still the Yankees that you're on. The challenge is, I think we're starting to realize 3 years in, Anthony Volpe is just a slightly below average player.
That's what he is. Mike is in Manalapan. Hey, Mike.
Hey, what's going on, Evan? He has everything.
All's good.
First of all, do I like the Ryan McMahon trade? It's an upgrade. Am I really happy with it? Not really, brother, but tell you something. Great. That's the best part about it right now for the Yankees. But here's your other point, Evan. When I called you, there was a little different.
Ah, we're losing you.
I think we're losing you, unfortunately. But it sounded like you wanted to confront me. Do you know what he wanted to say? Because at least let him make his confrontational point, even if we lost him.
I think he was basically going to say that you said that you would put Volpe at shortstop now the rest of the season, but then you mentioned earlier in the open that now that you have McMahon, maybe you can platoon Volpe here and there with Peraza.
No, it's the same thing. Volpe's playing most of the time, but you no longer have to play him every single day.
Yeah.
There can be a day, as Tiki mentioned, I mentioned earlier, where once or twice a week, Peraza can play the position, because part of the problem with Volpe, and it's a good thing, is that he plays every single day. And we love guys that play every single day. But we love guys who play every single day who are good.
Yeah.
He's not good enough.
No,
so I'm not benching him right now because I don't think Peraza's a better option. I'm not sending him down. I'm saying that instead of having to commit to him 7 days a week,
yeah,
you can now mix in a Peraza shortstop.
But here's the other thing that you have to consider, because if you just look at his career numbers, and this is a number conversation, forget the eye test, because the eye test was going to tell us we hate him right now. I'm talking about Anthony Volpe. His OPS is better this year than it's been in previous seasons. Mm-hmm. His OPS plus is a tick higher. It's still below average. Bill's below the 100 point, but he's actually playing better offensively, even though it doesn't feel like it, this year than he has in previous years. And we know what he did in the postseason last year. He was actually really good. His OPS was over 800. Had hit 280. He hit a couple, a home run he had, and he was valuable to this team in the clutch moments of the season, that is the postseason. So this just could be what we always see from Major League Baseball players. You know why, Evan? Because it's just baseball, Susan, right? Yeah. Sometimes you go through these stretches, whether it's a month or 2 months, where you just suck.
Yeah.
And I think Volpe might just suck right now.
It's a 34-game stretch that he is in right now, along with defense that's inconsistent, where he's hitting 144.
Yeah.
That's really bad.
Of course it is.
And he's not Francisco Lindor, where you could say, he's Lindor, he'll figure it out. So you're not wrong about his overall numbers, but the real issue is the defense.
Yeah.
That's
what frustrates me more.
Right. You could argue that Peraza, as bad as he is offensively, will actually play a more consistent shortstop at this point than Volpe will.
And honestly, that's why I think it's worth sitting him down every couple of days here or there.
And that's a difference. I agree with you. That's a difference between just flat out benching him and saying Peraza's the shortstop. I agree with you. I think you can now be more judicial in sitting him. And not being committed to having to play him every single day.
And that is baseball.
It is, Susan. Justin is in Verona. Hey, Justin.
Hey, what's going on, Evan Tiki? I love the show.
Thank you, man.
I want to talk about McManaman. I don't love it, but I do like it. I think they saw it as, the Yankees saw it as, third base is a problem, but it might not be the biggest problem. Watching Yankee games every day, I think the bullpen is the biggest issue. So why go spend all your prospects on a guy like Suarez when you can keep your top prospect and maybe get a bullpen arm or a starter out of it? I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, I think that when you look at the Yankees through the course of 100-plus games, they have the best offense in the American League.
Yeah, still.
Still. Despite getting pitcher-like production out of third base, despite Volpe hitting 140 over the last 35 games, despite all of that, every metric tells you the Yankees have the best offense in the American League.
Right.
So it's tough to say that's their biggest problem when they're scoring more runs than anybody else. Now, you could always be better. You could always score even more runs. Like, there's no cap on the amount of runs you could score. But, yeah, I think you look at the state of the rotation right now, and there's a few reasons why you lean to that being their biggest issue. Bullpen scares me as well, but at least at the back end, you feel good about Luke Weaver, you feel good about Devin Williams, and you even feel good about Timmy Hill.
Yep.
The problem with the rotation right now is Rodon is always going to have this lack of trust from Yankee fans.
And he's getting up there innings pitched.
Yeah.
And it's just not something he does deeply every year. That is, go 200-plus innings.
Right, he's he just doesn't have... Like, you don't know what you're necessarily getting from him down the stretch. But he's in the rotation, no questions asked. Max Fried, for what we know, is healthy, but he hasn't been the same guy for a month.
Right.
Now, is it the blister stuff? Is it just the league has now seen him, which I don't buy as much anymore in this modern age, but he did get off to an unsustainable start. Marcus Stroman's been good, but how long do you trust him?
How long does that last? Well, I mean, the good thing is with Stroman is he's always been a second-half fader.
Right.
But this year he didn't pitch until the second
there
half.
There is no second half for Marcus
this
Stroman.
This is the first half.
So you're right. Weaver's been, he's a back-of-the-rotation arm. And we'll see about Schlittler. He's only made two starts. So could they use enhancements in the rotation? Absolutely.
Yeah, they're likely looking at a starting pitcher at the trade deadline.
And similarly to the Mets, if they add a starting pitcher at the trade deadline, dare I say two, they could take a Cam Schlittler and possibly shorten him up and make him affect a bullpen arm.
Of course.
It happens all the time.
The stuff that he has, 100 miles an hour plus sometimes, I don't know what a secondary pitch is off the top of my head, but that's all you need.
Yeah.
Throw gas and then have something off speed that gets people chasing.
And Luis Hill's coming, but what do we expect from Luis Hill? I think the way you got to ask yourself with rotation help, and Met fans can play the same game, is close your eyes, you're in the playoffs. Let's assume the Mets make the playoffs, the Yankees make the playoffs. No guarantee, but they're in the playoffs. And not only are they in the playoffs, they're in a best of five. They've somehow jumped over the wild card series. And in a best of five, you're likely going to need three, maybe four starters. In the LCS, you definitely need four starters.
Yeah.
Which guys currently on your team do you say, that's a playoff starter? And I think in the Yankees' case, the number is literally two. It's Max Fried and it's Carlos Rodon.
Right.
And even Rodon, you don't trust, but he's clearly a playoff starter. We all know that.
Right. I actually believe that come the postseason where he's just dialed in, he'll be fine.
And either way, he's going to pitch in the postseason.
Of course.
So you got two guys. No one's saying that about Weaver. No one's saying that right now about Stroman. Schlittler's got to do more. Can we get there with him? Maybe. I mean, it's only been two starts.
You mean Warren, not Weaver.
Warren. I don't know why I keep saying Weaver. Right. I apologize. Will Warren. Warren. It's the W's that fight for some reason. Warren. Okay, we're good now. I won't screw that up again. Yes. If I do, I'll throw a dollar into the King Judge jar. I apologize.
Which, by the way, I sat at the left hand of the King last night.
Excuse me?
I went to dinner last night at the corner store by my buddy Eugene Rim, who owns it. Got me and my Tracy and wife and our friends, Lori and Sam, went to dinner. And guess who saddles up next to us?
King Judge?
King Judge and Samantha.
Are you serious?
Literally right next to us. It was awesome.
Now, couple of things.
I only said hi for a minute. I didn't bother him.
That's really. What I was going to ask you. Did you say hi?
I said, hey, what's up? Good to see you. Well, I know Samantha because we ran a marathon together.
Okay.
And so I've met Judge a couple times, but not, I don't know him deep like I know
him. So you were really saying hi to his wife. You weren't really saying hi to him.
No, I said hi to Judge, and then I said hello to Samantha, gotcha. Who I know because we ran a marathon together. And that's who else was sitting there? Paul Rudd. I was like, man, this is like the spot to be today.
Really?
It was great. But he was cool. He was a good dude.
Wow.
I almost decided to tell him that, you know, we call you King Judge on the show.
Oh, you needed to do that.
I would have felt awkward.
Yeah.
I didn't do it.
Yeah, I didn't even bring that up.
When we talk about you, we call you King Judge.
And when we don't call you King Judge, we have to put a dollar in the pot.
Yeah, so expect a hefty donation at the end of the year.
What did King Judge have for dinner?
I did not look.
Dude. Oh, come on.
I'm not peeping. My back was to him.
So
I wasn't looking.
Guess that's awkward to have to turn around every time.
Right.
Well, good for the King. He's enjoying his off day. Paul Rudd, I ran into one time.
Uh-huh.
And
he must live down here.
Well,
because I feel like I've seen him multiple times.
Sean ran into him once outside of the building here, too.
Right. Really?
Yeah, he's like everywhere.
So, because I ran into him at a completely different location. I was in the elevator going upstairs before game 5 of the 2015 World Series.
Oh, get out.
The elevator to go to my seats in the 300 level. It was me and my wife. I was meeting my dad there. So me and my wife are in the elevator, and all of a sudden they're at Citi Field.
Okay.
And there's Paul Rudd decked out in royal stuff.
Really?
Big royal fan, yeah. You could probably look it up, I'm sure.
Childhood best friend with Joe Buck, too.
Is that true?
Yeah.
So he must be from that area, because obviously Joe Buck is a St. Louis guy.
That's forgivable.
Oh, no, I'm not mad at him, but...
He's a New Yorker, but that's forgivable.
But my wife wanted, like, to say something, and I'm like, F him, he's the enemy. He's sitting there in...
It's Paul Rudd, though, dude.
It's game 5 of the World Series.
Look, who cares?
Excuse me?
It's Paul Rudd.
Who cares?
He's not playing.
He's the enemy, man.
He's not the enemy.
This wasn't a regular season game in June. This was our destiny. Game 5 of the World Series. So I gave him a dirty look because he was wearing the royal stuff.
That's so mean.
And I wouldn't say a word to him.
Dude.
I'm sure he didn't care. He didn't know who the hell I was. And who was I? I was a midday host. You know, I was just hanging out. But wow, so you ran into Rudd and King Judge.
Yes. It was amazing.
So the point is, who starts in the playoffs? That's how you, and if your answer is only two, that means you need to add an arm. See, I think in the Met case, your number gets to 3, maybe 4. Shomania, yes. Clearly, right?
Yes. Senga.
Kodai Senga, yes. David Peterson, yes.
100%.
So I think the Mets have a firm 3.
Your swing is Clay?
Clay and Montas.
Right.
I think both of those guys, based on the way they pitch.
And by the way, you're in a good spot because if Frankie Montas turns out to be, I don't know, he can get the 6 innings and he's strong and he feels like he's your 4 starter. Clay Holmes just moves right into the bullpen.
Right, which improves your bullpen.
100%.
So I think the Mets, and that game tells you that barring injury, and obviously injuries could change everything, the Mets don't have a need for a rotation arm.
No, they need a reliever.
They need
or another reliever because they already have one.
You could always add a bunch of relievers. Right. They added Gregory Soto, they could add more. In the Yankee case, am I wrong to say the answer is only 2? It's Max Fried and Carlos Rodon. Can we get there with Marcus Stroman? Sure. That can change. I'm just not there yet with him.
Yeah.
Can we get there with Will Warren? Probably not, but I guess we could.
No.
Can we get there with Cam Schlittler? Maybe. It's only been a handful of starts. And can we get there with Luis Hill? Yes. I think if Luis Hill comes back and he picks up where he left off, absolutely we can get there with them. But as of right now, I think the number is only 2. That's the number. We'll get back to your calls next, 888-808-1019. We'll mix in some football, including a lecture from the head coach of the New York Jets, Aaron Glenn. And we'll keep you posted. The Mets have already made a trade. The Yankees have already made a trade. Is another one coming before the close of business? We'll let you know what we're hearing. Plus, Jack Curry. Every Yankee fan trusts Jack Curry. I agree. He'll join us coming up later on in the show. All live from the Town Fair Tire Studios, powered by Town Fair Tire. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody.
Are you ready to dive into the story, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring Podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring Podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
Yankee fans will have to wait one more day to see the debut of Ryan McMahon, who they acquired earlier today because their lineup's already been posted for their game against the Phillies. One more day of Oswald Peraza at third base.
Yay!
Yay! He's getting three hits tonight, by the way.
Of course. One of them will be a home run.
Yeah, you know what? I like that one. I may have to go on FanDuel and do an Oswald Peraza home run bet and see if that's available. But Boone did take my advice yesterday when we were talking about the defense and what you can do, what you can control, besides trading for guys or changing your roster.
We have a very good defensive club.
And the two things were, hey, Jason Dominguez is a problem in left field. As much as I like Jason Dominguez, we all like Jason Dominguez. Maybe you sit him because your best defensive outfield is Bellinger in left, Grisham in center, and Judge in right. Well, he's done that, check number one,
right?
Because Bellinger's in left, Grisham's in center, Judge's in right. And the other thing is, as much as we all love Ben Rice, Paul Goldschmidt is a first baseman. Ben Rice is not. And so Paul Goldschmidt is back in the lineup playing first base. So the Yankees are putting out their best defensive team tonight against the former New York Met, Taijuan Walker. It'll be Grisham, Judge, Bellinger, Giancarlo, Jazz, Goldie, Wells, Volpe, and Peraza. And starting tomorrow, you can add Ryan McMahon to that mix. Another left-handed bat. Yankees are very, very left-handed, which I like, because for years they were so not left-handed.
Right.
It was the opposite. They had like one lefty in their lineup, maybe two. And now, especially on a day like tomorrow, when McMahon makes his debut and you take Peraza out, you'd be doing one, two, three, four, five. Not right. Bad.
Right.
I like it.
You going to bat him ninth?
I would
then,
bat.
Then it's lefty-righty the whole way.
Yeah, no, I would go, assuming it's the same guys that are playing today, I would go Grisham one, Judge 2, mm-hmm. Bellinger 3, Stanton 4, Chisholm 5, mm-hmm. Goldie 6, McMahon 7, Wells 8, Volpe 9. Back-to-back lefties.
Right.
And then I'd have Volpe 9th because Volpe should be hitting 9th.
Right. And just in case he gets on, maybe Judge can drive him in.
There you go. Very much so. Diego is in East Meadow. What's up, Diego?
Hey, Diego.
Hey, boys. How you doing?
All's good.
Yo.
Listen. The better question to ask your friend Salicata is the AL East over?
Half a game.
There's too many holes on this lineup. You're talking about shuffling 30 to 40% of the starting lineup. The leg has dropped on the Yankee season. Let's talk about Giants training camp, because that's the better topic right now.
Well, two things. It may be the better topic because it's interesting, but the Yankee season is not over. And I've got news for you, and I hate saying this because it's such a loser mentality, but sometimes it's true. Even if you think they're not coming back to win the American League East because they're 4.5 games back and the Blue Jays won again last night, and you just think they're better, that's fine. In baseball in 2025, just make the playoffs. And if you get hot at the right time, you could beat the Blue Jays. You could beat anybody. The American League is flawed. Like, as much as I like Toronto, they're flawed. Houston, flawed. The Tigers can't get out of their own freaking way.
Right.
So even if you think the AL East is over, and I can do that in the Sal voice, the AL East is over.
I quit.
They're still right there to go on some kind of crazy run. And I know you don't believe that, and I'm not saying you should believe that, but that's the beauty of baseball in 2025.
Right.
So you never give up, even if you know your team is flawed.
Right. The Blue Jays are just ridiculously hot right now. You just go back and look at their series. The only one they've lost is the Athletics, surprisingly enough, when they finally lost that 10-game winning streak.
Is the AL East over?
No. But, I mean, they're just blitzing through good teams right now.
No, I get you.
Yankees. I mean, they swept San Francisco, the Yankees, they took 2 out of 3, and now they took the first game of Detroit, 11-4.
Yeah, I know. They're playing.
Now, Detroit is struggling, but still.
The Blue Jays are playing tremendous baseball right now. Is the AL East over? I wouldn't say the AL East is over. What I will say is the Yankees are making this very difficult for themselves. Mm-hmm. I would say that because, you know, they're not only 4.5 games back, but now the Blue Jays have the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
So you need to, over the course of the next 60 games, make up 5. Now, is that impossible? No, it's not impossible. But my point to Diego is, even if they don't win the division, they start the wild card series against the Mariners at Yankee Stadium. And I'm using that as a hypothetical because that's literally what would be the case if the season ended today. Are you telling me, who cares, they can't win that series?
Of course they can.
Of course they can.
Of course they will.
And then if they will, as you say, and now they're matched up against the Detroit Tigers, mm-hmm. who actually, no, the Tigers get picked off by the Red Sox. And so the Yankees are matched up with the Red Sox in a best of five. You tell me you can't beat them?
Of course you can.
You tell me, who cares, I'm not going to watch? Right. Let me check out the Giants? I mean, no. So I don't buy that in baseball anymore. I don't want to hear it. Like, even from Met fans, yeah, we suck, we're flawed. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of flawed teams that get hot at the right time. The Braves in 2021 is like the greatest example of it.
Phillies, same thing.
Yeah. And the Phillies were the third best team in the division that year.
Hey.
And they got to the World Series.
2022.
Alex in White Plains. Hey, Alex.
Oh. Hey, guys.
Hey, Alex.
Yo. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
What's up? I'm really happy with this pickup we got with Ryan. It sounds very similar to when the Yankees picked up Scott Brosius in 97.
That's a good one. Numbers. Yeah, because Brosius had terrible numbers. People forget that. He looked like he was terrible. And then he comes to the Yankees. It's like going to Lourdes, and he became a superstar.
Exactly. Now you can cement Volpe batting ninth for the time being, and then you see what happens if he makes it better defensively.
I actually like that comparison, even though it's 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. Scott Brosius, when the Yankees acquired him, he was coming off a year in Oakland in which he had 203 with 11 home runs and a 576 OPS. He comes to the Yankees, hits 300, 840 OPS. Now, is that going to happen? I wouldn't go that far, but I do think there's a chance that Ryan McMahon is going to benefit from being in a better environment. I do think that is very much on the table. Mark's in Monmouth County. Hey, Mark.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the call. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, sir.
Yeah, looking at Ryan McMahon now, I'm a Yankee fan. I do like the upgrade just defensively. This is my first point I want to get. His 26 plate appearances in Yankee Stadium, he's hitting above 30 for his career.
Yes, I saw that. Yes.
236 for his career against American League team. So there's your average right there for those two things. My next point would be, Evan, I totally agree with the Yankees. They need another arm. I would go to the Twins. You got Joe Ryan, $3 million, 10-4, 260 ERA. Get him. Maybe you can get Duran in the bullpen. I'm not a huge Ben Rice fan. You're playing Goldschmidt and Bellinger first already. Or you go to the Guardians, who are a little out of it. Shane Bieber is coming back. I know he's 30 years old, but he's coming off the arm, but he's starting to ramp up. Is there a chance you can get him in Class A? You know, you could deal Ben Rice, Trent Grisham, a couple prospects. You don't have to dig into Jones. You could put Jones up.
No. But that way, you were right till the very end. Like, let's stick with the Minnesota one. So you bring up Joe Ryan, who's having a great year and is under team control for multiple years, and Johan Duran, one of the better closers in baseball, not named Edwin Diaz. If the New York Yankees made a trade for Joe Ryan and Johan Duran, they'd be the favorites in the American League. You'd be adding a legitimate, really? Absolutely. You'd be adding a top-of-the-rotation arm and an elite-level closer to go along with two pretty good relievers to begin with.
But isn't that over-killing the closer, the back end of your bullpen?
I don't think you ever can, unless you're just worried about how Duran or Devin would react to not being the ninth-inning guy, which I guess is a fair concern. Luke Weaver's fine.
Right.
You can pitch Luke Weaver whenever.
Right. He's newly to this role of potentially being a closer.
Look, you go out and get a 29-year-old ace-like pitcher and a top-level closer, that's the jackpot. But here's the mistake. So I'm with you on that, the beginning part. Like, go get those guys. That's great. If you think it's going to cost you Trent Grisham and a couple of prospects not named Spencer Jones, you're mistaken. That's an expensive deal. Now, you could argue it's worth giving up Spencer Jones in a deal like that.
Right.
We don't know what Spencer Jones is going to be.
Especially if the starter's not costing you that much on your cap.
Well, not only do neither guy make a lot of money, they're both on your team for the next few years because they're under team control. So if you ask me, hey, would I be willing to move a prospect like Spencer Jones and I'm getting Joe Ryan and Johan Duran? The answer is yes. Now, we could argue about it if you want to be a prospect hugger, and that's fine. I'm telling you, the upgrade and the control of those two players is so good that I would be, I'd be driving Spencer to Minnesota in a trade like that. And you laugh at me. Yes, the Yankees would be the favorites in the American League. You kidding me?
But he's the next kid that everybody's going to be fawning over. It just is.
I get it.
I mean, Yankee fans are going to be fawning over Spencer Judge because Spencer Jones.
That's a Freudian slip, all right. Spencer Judge.
Spencer Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, he is the left-handed judge, they say, because he's so damn big. But they're fawning over him. Three home runs the other night. He's raking in AAA. So it's like, just give him a chance. So if you trade him away before you ever see him in the Yankee uniform, you're gonna feel like you wasted.
I get that. And look, King Judge is an extreme comparison. He's the best player in baseball. But let's say Spencer Jones becomes a really good player.
Yes.
You are still getting a top-level closer who's 27. Remember, both Devin Williams and Luke Weaver are free agents at the end of the year.
Right.
Johan Duran is not. He's not a free agent until 2028. And Joe Ryan, who's proven to be a top-of-the-rotation arm, who too is not a free agent until 2028. Even if Spencer Jones is good, that trade is worth it. Like what you just added. Like you don't shortchange the addition, bro.
Oh, I know, but I'm just saying the emotional void that's going to be created because you didn't see him, and now you're thinking it's a Pete Crow Armstrong thing. That's what you're going to think.
But you know what the difference is? Fine, he's Pete Crow Armstrong. The Mets traded Pete Crow Armstrong for one position player who is a rental who is gone at the end of the year. Those two players our last caller referred to are under team control, and they're pitchers, two of them, a starter and a closer. Like, again, that could be a everybody wins kind of deal, because even if Spencer Jones is good, you could think that deal is worth it.
Right.
Then you sign Joe Ryan long-term. He's in your rotation for a half a decade. Johan Duran is your closer. Who cares about Devin Williams? Who cares about Luke Weaver? I mean, I don't know if Minnesota's doing any of that, by the way. And so I love the idea. The part at the end where our last call was like, yeah, it's not going to cost that much. What are you, nuts? Of course it's going to. You think they want Trent Grisham in that trade? I mean, come on.
Right, what is that doing for them?
Nothing. Exactly. He's a free agent at the end of the year.
Well, I mean, it's just clearance salary.
Well, that doesn't work for Minnesota.
Right.
To quote the great Hulk Hogan, who passed away the other day, I'm about to mock him, but look, Hulk Hogan did a lot of great stuff. He did some weird stuff. One of the things he was criticized for was when they would tell him, Hulk, you're going to lose tonight. Hulk would say, quote, that doesn't work for me, brother. So if I'm the Minnesota Twins and it's like, oh, you're going to take back Trent Grisham and that, I'd Hulk the Yankees and say, that doesn't work for me, brother. Because that would not work for me, brother.
So. And what you gonna do when Hulkamania and the largest arms in the world run wild on you?
Are you ready to dive into the story, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
Let's go to Corey in Manalapan. Hey, Corey. Yo, Corey.
Corey
going once. Corey, I'll put you on hold in case you figure things out. Charlie's in Middletown. Hey, Charlie.
Oh, I wanted to call about the McMahon trade, but we just said Joe Ryan and Durant. I'm not making that trade. I mean, the Yankee rotation lost their best pitcher, Garrett Cole. Next year, you're looking at Cole, Fried, Rodon, Heel, and maybe the kid does turn out to be, you know, a back-of-end young kid. But what I think is the biggest problem is Trent Grissom on this team, because I think it's blocking Dominguez. If you move Grissom, you get a piece, a relief pitcher, and you put Dominguez in center field, and you finally see what this kid can do. He doesn't play every day. He's playing a position he's never played before. They've had this kid since he's 16 years old, and you're playing a part-time for Trent Grissom, who, like, it's Trent Grissom.
Yeah, but I get it, because coming into this season, I would have felt the same way. It's Trent Grisham. Trent Grisham's been better than Jason Dominguez.
Yeah,
he's had a better offensive year, and he's a better defensive player. So I think what Boone is doing is he's playing the guy that gives him the better chance to win every night.
And by the way, that's what you hope happens with Ryan McMahon. He plays like Trent Grisham. Trent Grisham, great defensive center fielder, gold glover out in center field. But his career batting average is, what, 219 or something? 220, whatever it may be. He comes here, he's hitting 260.
Yeah. I think what's difficult is if we were having this conversation in April, I would agree with our last caller. Hey, let me see what Dominguez is. Let me see what Dominguez is. We have now played almost 100 games. In fact, Trent Grisham's played 85. Jason Dominguez has played 84. So it's perfect. They've basically played the same amount of games. Trent Grisham, in just about every aspect, is better than Jason Dominguez. Doesn't mean he will be next year. Mm-hmm. He better not. Or the year after. But like every metric tells you that Trent Grisham is better than Dominguez right now. And so if you're drawing up a lineup card right now on July 25th, right now, he gives you a better chance to win. Trent Grisham's WAR is 3. Jason Dominguez's WAR is 0.5. Trent Grisham's at 17 home runs. Jason Dominguez is at 9. I mean, OPS. And then I haven't even mentioned defense, where Grisham is a Gold Glove caliber center fielder. So if the Yankees were a rebuilding team, fine. They're not. They're trying to win. And so I think what you've got to do is play this out with Grisham playing center field, because he's better right now than Dominguez. And then I think next year it's a completely different conversation.
Right.
Like, are the Yankees going to re-sign Trent Grisham at the end of the year? I'd lean towards no. I mean, I guess you could.
Right.
But I want to see more Dominguez.
Unless he just turns into, anyway, hits 15 home runs over the next 60 games and all of a sudden becomes a hero in the postseason, you're not re-signing.
I'd be skeptical of him. Like, right. He's still young. Grisham's only 28 years old, which we forget about. But, I mean, his career numbers are so kind of like blah.
Right.
That I am still under the assumption that this is a career season. Could it possibly be the beginning of a renaissance? Maybe. But think about the money and the years Grisham's going to demand. That's a lot to risk on a guy who may be going through a career renaissance.
Right. Or he could just be getting the Yankee lift that we've been talking about that Ryan McMahon, you hope, gets when he comes here as a third baseman.
Maybe. Jesse's in Morristown. Hey, Jesse.
What's up, Jess?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Just wanted to talk real quick. First of all, Trent Grisham has an 800-plus OPS and is a very smooth center fielder who gets amazing jumps. Sometimes maybe a little too smooth. So I don't know what that guy's talking about. But I wanted to talk about Spencer Jones in a way that you could probably, you know, see what he is if he's not dealt at the trade deadline. And I wanted to get your thoughts. So I'm thinking we move, maybe not all the time, but Bellinger, he plays a really good first base, probably the only Yankee here who could play at position pretty well. So I put him at first base, and I would actually send down J.C. Estrada and put Ben Rice as the backup catcher with Wells.
That's not bad.
Those are their natural positions, and you could bring Jones up, see what he is. You know, Dominguez doesn't have to play all the time, and I think you have a better defensive thing. So I just wanted to get what you guys thought about that.
So the other guy that would be losing playing time is Goldschmidt.
Right.
Basically, Goldie goes to the bench as a relatively expensive right-handed bat off the bench.
Yeah, that kind of sucks. Because I like Goldie, and he's 37, and he's contributing.
And he's also fixed himself, because he had a bad month last month, but he's hitting here in the month of July.
Right, and everybody thought that at some point he would fade, and the fade in June was, like, in people's minds, oh, this is what we're going to get for the rest of the season. But he didn't. It's not. Like, he came back around. And he's a good fielding first baseman. So it just feels like there's too much redundancy on this team, and there's too many bats that you want to have in the lineup. And in order to make everybody happy, it makes everybody else unhappy.
I know, but it's such a good problem to have.
Of course it's a good problem. This is,
like, it feels
But it also feels disjointed.
Well, at what point with Spencer Jones tearing it up at AAA do you say, I have to call him up? Now, it's only been 18, 20 games, but it's historic. Like, there's no denying that what he's done at AAA is something that's eye-popping. At what point, if you're Brian Cashman or you're the Yankees or you're a Yankee fan, obviously we're hearing it from Yankee fans, where you say, it doesn't matter what I have to do. Right. I have to do something to get this guy up here because what he's doing in AAA is insane. So far at Scranton, it's 19 games. It's a .400 batting average with 13 home runs. 13 home runs in 94 plate appearances.
1,400 OPS.
With a 1,400 OPS. Again, not the biggest sample size in the world, but still, 13 home runs in 19 games is not human.
And they're like mammoth home runs, too. Right. Like 450-foot bombs.
But if you look at all 2025, and part of that is in Somerset and AA, I mean, his OPS is 1,100.
Yeah. If you combine his numbers at both levels, it's 68 games, so it's less than half a season.
Mm-hmm.
29 home runs, 57 RBIs, and an 1,100 OPS.
It's absurd.
It is. I remember last year when people talked about Spencer Jones, it was sort of annoying because it was like, he's not hitting at AA. Why are we talking about this guy? Right. Let him hit. Let him perform. We'll have the conversation. We're having the conversation. I mean, he's forcing the issue, and that's great. That's a fantastic thing. It's not exactly the same, but I believe some of that's happening with the Mets right now with the pitching, with the way Nolan McLain is throwing, with the way Jonah Tong is throwing, where you're like looking down at the box scores every 5 days saying, hey, can he help up here? Guys are performing so well down at the minor leagues.
Right. At some point, you figured it out.
But
it
I think
feels like he figured it out.
But the cleanest way to get him up here involves Dominguez going down, because Dominguez isn't playing if Jones is called up. So literally, Jason Dominguez would just be rotting on the bench, and I do think it's important for young players to get a chance to play. Let's go to Chris up in Michigan. What's up, Chris?
Evan and Tiki, how's it going, guys?
Oh, good.
Good, man. What's up?
Okay, so I wanted to call about Soto. I think, in all honesty, and then I got another point to make afterwards, I think he's going to help, especially in the playoffs. I'm not, like, trying to say playoffs are guaranteed, but, you know, he's been really electric and fire this year against lefties.
Yes.
And I think about the Dodgers lefties. I think about the Phillies lefties. And that's where I think it can help. But my big question about him, Evan, do you think Stearns is trying to complete the Soto Infinity Stone in the MLB? Because I'm hearing, and I hope John Heyman doesn't get mad and say, I can't even believe it, but I heard he's trying to talk Giovanni Soto out of retirement and join the team. Can't even believe it.
Well, I think someone tweeted this at Pete Hoffman, so it's not my idea. And this definitely sounds like a Sean Morash thing. You know what they say?
What's that?
Two Sotos is better than one Soto. I like that one?
That one. Nice.
That's why I didn't want to take credit for it. Look, Gregory
Good
Soto.
Call.
Gregory, here's the complicating thing. So I mentioned this with Ryan McMahon, how his home road splits are very extreme this year. But if you look at last year, it's not. Same thing with Gregory Soto. So this year, when you dive into his numbers, you see that he's murder on lefties. That's great. Now, there's a three-batter minimum, so there's, you know, it's a different world. You're going to have to face some righties. But if you look at last year's numbers, that's not the case at all. Lefties hit him fine. So that, to me, matters more. Like, when I'm looking at a reliever and seeing their splits lefty-righty, I need to see consistencies over it to believe that it's real. Otherwise, it just may be a facade over a small sample size. If you look at his career, he is definitely better than against lefties than righties. But last year, he didn't do very well against lefties.
Right.
So I think, like every reliever you acquire, there's this unknown to what he is. He's been an inconsistent reliever throughout his career. He was once a closer. He lost that job. He's bounced around the league. Like I said with the Yanks, is he better than what they've had? Yes, he's probably going to replace Alex Carrillo on the roster and gives him a second lefty. Would I rather have Gregory Soto than Alex Carrillo or Brandon Waddell coming back? Of course. So from that standpoint, why not?
Mm-hmm.
But I can't sit here and tell you I'm super confident.
Right.
He's a reliever who's been up and down throughout his major league career. It's just your typical, let's see what we got kind of move.
It's your typical David Stearns move. It's what
yes.
he does. It's what he's done. He had to do it when he was in Milwaukee because that's just how the finances were. It's what he's continuing to do because it worked last year.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Absolutely. And last year it was three different relievers. It was Maton, it was Stanek, it was Brazoban. This year, I think it's going to be three again. Now, is one of those guys going to be Emmanuel Clase, who's not a lottery ticket? Probably not. Is one of those guys going to be Johan Duran, who's not a lottery ticket? Probably not. I believe it's probably three different lottery tickets. Three different relievers that they're going to add. It's not going to cost them a lot. And if you can hit on one of them, or dare I say two of them, it'll feel like it was well worth it. That's the
Agreed.
Key. We'll find out more about the Yankee plans before the trade deadline. Jack Curry is going to join us a little bit after 5 o'clock. We'll get back to your phone calls. A lot of strong opinions on what the Yankees have done and should do. And earlier today at New York Jet Camp, something was said that tells me a lot about the New York Jets coaching staff. And a lot about what to expect in 2025. We'll play that clip for you, plus Aaron Glenn lectures us. So a little football update coming up. It's Evan and Tiki here on The Fan.
Are you ready to dive into the story, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.